This episode of The Last Video Store is brought to you by Tropfest. It's happening on Sunday the 22nd of February at Centennial Park, and I will be there, as will you. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Last Video Store, the show where I, Alexi Toliopoulos, your friend in film, talk to cool people about their favorite films and gives them a recommendation just like they would back in the old days at an old school video store. My name is Alexi Toliopoulos, and this is the first newish episode of the year. And that is why I'm a little stilted while doing this introduction. I'm really excited to be back, but in particular, very excited to be back with The Last Video Store with genuinely, of course, a dream guest for this show. The great Baz Luhrmann is here talking about his new film, Epic Elvis Presley in Concert. And my gosh, this is a great chat. A bit of a short episode, Producer M.
Yes.
But we had much longer with Baz than most people did, so.
Still such a get.
Such a get. And I've been very lucky this week to be introducing this new film, this concert documentary film, Epic Elvis in Concert with Baz. And gosh, I'm having such a good time.
Yeah, because I know you are a huge fan of the King.
Oh,
I know,
yes.
you talk about him a lot.
I know a lot of the time you can go, Alexi doesn't believe in the monarchy, but yes, there's one king that I worship. I talk about him a lot. I love Elvis Presley. And you do too, right?
Yeah, that's how I knew he's often called the King. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Em, like this movie, I can't wait for you to see it.
Yeah.
I think that what I think it really does well is this is a documentary concert film. Mm-hmm. It also has a lot of biographical stuff from Elvis's life. And I think I loved Elvis, the Baz Luhrmann film. Like I really, really loved that film. And I think Baz Luhrmann's style, this kind of collage kind of overlaid, like, you know, I don't know how to describe it, but collage or mosaic style that Baz employs in his cinematic visions translates fantastically well to the factual documentary space. Like, this is such a rare film. He's uncovered this incredible archive of long thought, long lost Elvis footage of these, I believe it's like 6 concerts in Las Vegas from his residency. And they're in beautiful like 16mm and a few 8mm things as well. Like it just is such a fun film. Like at the screening I hosted the other night, the open air cinema at the Botanic Gardens, there were people standing up and dancing during the movie.
That's amazing.
Like it's a mesmerizing experience. Like I just adored this film.
And I've heard from other people that you don't necessarily have to be an Elvis fan. I heard from someone else who went to an advanced screening who wasn't into Elvis that she's a fan now because it was such an amazing film and it shone a light on him that she'd never seen before.
Yes. Well, we'd get into that in the conversation with Baz because he uses this great we'll get into it very quickly in the talk. I don't want to take away from the talk because Baz and I get into it in a really nice way. Got along very, very well. I give him a great recommendation, so stick tuned to that. Before we dive in, I'm just going to do a quick couple of plugs. My comedy festival show, VHS, that I'm touring around Australia, is selling very, very well. We have sold out most of Sydney. So Sydney is nearly sold out. This is your last chance to buy tickets for that. I'm doing Melbourne Comedy Festival, selling very well for Melbourne Comedy Festival. Mm-hmm. From March 10th, I'll be in Adelaide for almost a full week. Not selling quite as well. So if you're in Adelaide, pick up those tickets. I'd love to see you there. It's the first place I'm taking this show. So I'm really excited to kind of, I guess, for me, experience the show with you guys. Like, I'm very proud of where this show is at, but I think Adelaide will be a really beautiful experience. So I will see you guys there. Pick up tickets in the show notes. But until then, let us get straight on to my conversation with Baz. And I'll also say, stick around to the outro because, Em, I want to tell you my Elvis story.
I'm so excited.
My Elvis origin story. I'm going to save that for the outro because I felt too embarrassed to tell it to Baz. But we're going to get into our chat with Baz Luhrmann right now. Great, fabulous chat about Epic Elvis Presley in Concert.
The Last Video Store.
Baz, Baz, thank you so much for joining me here again today.
Love it.
I want to kick things off. A lot of my show is about kind of evoking that sense of discovery for cinema that one received back in the day at the video store.
Yeah, and I was there.
Do you have any video store memories that you'd like to share?
Oh, God, yeah. Do you know what? There was one when I was living, I mean, we still have a place in New York. I have a bar in New York. Do come and visit.
I'd love to.
Monsieur's. as a plug. what's going on here? No. But I got to remember the name of it. Oh, my God, it was so legendary. Oh, it was one name. I mean, Quentin used to go there too. Like, it was floors and floors and floors of VHS.
Where was it?
Oh, it was Lower East Side.
Yeah.
And it was like, man, that place, I just get lost in it for a long time. There's one in Paris still.
Yeah.
That's super legendary. I did an interview in that one too, yeah.
Yeah. I want to ask you as well, because part of my time, like behind the counter at the video store, one of the things I would do to pass the time a lot was I would be playing Elvis movies on the screens there.
Crazy.
And it was part of like my discovery of like falling in love deeper with Elvis's work. And whether it would be like, you know, fantasizing about my head popping out of that beautiful like khaki suit that he wears in Clambake with that beautiful piping.
Yeah, yeah.
Or discovering what I think is a true masterpiece, King Creole.
I agree with that.
What do you think about, now that you've seen probably more footage of Elvis than anyone that's ever lived, what do you think about him as a screen presence and a movie star?
Look, I'm glad you bring up King Creole because that was actually directed by Michael Curtiz, yeah, who directed Casablanca.
Yeah.
And that's Elvis in the hands of a good director. I mean, Walter Matthau's in that movie. I mean, he's got real actors around
playing
him.
Playing a great villain as
and
well.
And he is really great in it. I mean, Elvis in that movie is really Brando-esque.
Yeah.
He really handles the scene well. If that's him in his first go, he's truly on his way to being something great. And as he says, he was such a fan of James Dean. He said, you know, James Dean was a genius. I don't pretend I could be anything like him. But his love of wanting to act and go further, and the fact that he got caught in these kind of, you know, the ones, although much as we loved them, and I loved them too, they were my gateway too, but he felt so demeaned by it that he just sort of said, oh, right, I get $3 million. I'm the highest paid actor in Hollywood, actually. And the Colonel took care of everything else. And well, he says it in our movie. He says the scenes, they were just basically the same story with, you know, 10 different songs. And the Colonel worked out. Colonel said, hey, guess what? We have so much music. Let's not record new songs. Let's take the songs you've already done so we'd have to spend money there and we'll get the script written around the songs.
And I think that's something that Epic does really well is that it kind of translates that feeling that he has of, you know, feeling like he's, you know, those movies aren't as substantial as what his talents can be. And then in Epic, it translates nicely to going, well, this is what he likes doing because it's direct contact with an audience, direct communication, speaking to an audience.
I think it's him breaking out of the chains of what was around him. He could never quite work out the whole... I mean, it was a very complicated relationship, clearly, with the Colonel I deal with it in the film. But one thing he could control was when he performed in front of a live audience because no one could get in the way of him and the audience. And he made the choices. I mean, even in style, you know, he didn't have a stylist. You know, and I worked with Bill Ballou and stuff doing the costumes, but they were his ideas, you know. And, you know, you see him when he's rehearsing with the suites and stuff. He's orchestrating it. Like, he's the one that goes, let's take Bridge Over Troubled Water, essentially a folk song, and I'm going to turn it into a gospel powerhouse. And he does that musically. And I think you come to realize how gifted he is musically and how warm and approachable. He, of course, when you look like Elvis, you know, Whitney Houston's mum was in the Sweets Inspirations the year before the film we made or the footage we got. And Whitney tells a story that when she was 10, she said she meets Elvis. And she goes, you didn't go, hi, Mr. Elvis, nice to meet you. She said, you just saw Elvis and you stared, you know. That presence, the physical presence. And so he worked very hard to goof around and break down people's nervousness around him. And you see him so warmly working with the Sweets, with the band, with everyone.
What I think really struck me in this film is there's this moment that feels like the magic moment where everything kind of coalesces with what you're experimenting with, how your approach to storytelling is, I guess, how it's being put onto documentary or factual style filmmaking. And it was this moment where I feel like I'd never seen Elvis like this before, where he's just sitting there. He's just sitting there. And then you have this kind of unguarded interview playing over the top of it. And it was a moment where I go, I don't think I've ever seen Elvis just look like a normal person.
Person, yeah.
Just sitting there. And I think it happens just before he plays the two Beatles covers.
I was going to say, that's right. Thing. There is a moment there, exactly. Yeah. And he's just sitting there thinking. And because the moment he goes into the music, he becomes Elvis.
Mm.
But there's someone behind Elvis, like he says it in the movie. Elvis, the image versus the man. He says, very hard to live up to an image. The man's a different thing. And I think just for a second you see the man.
Yeah.
Just sitting there going like, oh, I don't know. You might be thinking, well, I have a lunch. But what it is he's not. But as soon as he gets into the song, he's getting into character.
And I think that works so well. You were telling me last night about discovering this piece of audio, this interview.
Yeah.
Runs for about 40 minutes, you were saying. Can you tell me about discovering that piece of audio and I guess how you brought
that,
it into the film?
That was the trigger. I mean, Jono Redman, my creative partner in this, and my editor, one of my great editors, but when we heard that audio and we saw all this footage and we thought, we've got to make something special different.
Mm.
We thought, that's it. Let's get out of the way. Because all of them tend to be people talking about Elvis or, you know, I put gas in his car, wrote a book. Was what if Elvis came to you kind of almost in a dream concert and he sang and told you his story from, as he says in the very beginning, from my point of view. And that was the trigger to making it the way it is.
Can you talk to me about, I guess, the moment of discovery, finding all this archive? And I mean, it's truly one of the great treasure troves I think you've come across.
Yeah, I mean, there were rumors of it, and Ernst Jorgensen, who's like the number one guy in the universe on Elvis, said, there are these reels that have been lost, they're mystical. I'm like, really? And I was thinking of using the footage just to show the audience and not build the showroom. We end up building the showroom, but for Elvis.
Yeah.
And then I had the resources to send guys actually into the salt mines in Kansas City where MGM keep all of the negative. And they look in through and they kick the door and I get these pictures of these. And by the way, when of these 67 boxes, 57 hours of the six performances that were shot in Vegas, 16 mil of the tour, and we came into possession of 8 mil never before seen. So then we got it all, and then it's a bit like, first of all, rumors got out that we had it, and so there was like, release the footage, you know, people with placards. But it was intense.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But we went like, we can't put it back in the salt mines. They'll come after us, you know. But
you have a duty now.
Yeah?
Yeah, you've got a duty. You've been sent a duty to put it together.
I have. We just said we've got to do something very special and different. And then this whole idea of the more you looked at it, the more, once we clawed back the sound and we went to car parks and bought some missing stuff off gangsters. And we went like, you know what? You come to know this very vulnerable, different side to Elvis. You know, you do get to know the man behind the myth, you know? And I thought that was what we had to do, was get out of the way and just let him tell it.
On Sunday, the 22nd of February, the world's largest short film festival returns, reclaiming its place as one of Australia's most iconic cultural events. Of course, I am speaking about Tropfest, which for over three decades has been a launch pad for some of the world's most celebrated storytellers and a magnet for audiences who love bold ideas, new voices, and unforgettable nights under the stars. And best of all, Tropfest is entirely free to attend. Come and witness the 16 finalist films have their world premiere on the big screen, judged live by an international jury, with winners announced on the night competing for a share of $100,000 in prizes. I absolutely love Tropfest. I've had many, many great nights there in the past, and truly, I could not be more excited for it to return. And I will say this, many of our guests that have been on the last video store got their start with films over at Tropfest. I think Nash Edgerton, I think Charles Williams, I think many more that I'm not even considering right now. So if you love the last video store, my God, Tropfest is, I dare I say, one of the birthplaces of the last video store. So truly could not be more pumped to get to go to Tropfest once again in my life, and hopefully for many more years. So what I tell you to do is bring a mat, bring your love of film, come to Tropfest on Sunday the 22nd of February at Centennial Park. It's free entry, and if you can't join in person, make sure you tune into the live stream on Tropfest's YouTube channel. Head to tropfest.com for more information and to dive into the extensive archive of past finalists and winners. And follow at Tropfest on socials for updates, announcements, and festival news. Can't wait to see you at Tropfest, baby.
Can you talk to me about your creative collaboration with Jonathan Redmond, for your sure. editor on this? Because, yeah. I mean, it's such a different approach for you. Your films always have like such a beautiful style of editing. Mm. But I guess for a film like this, factual filmmaking, what did you learn about your relationship with Jonathan, your creative partnership, when it came to applying that style to factual and documentary storytelling?
Well, it's a good question, because actually John and I have been doing kind of what you're watching for about 20 years. And yeah. what I mean is this, is that I work with Jono Redman and I have and then Matt Villa, and both of them came up under the great Jill Bilcock, actually.
One of the masters.
She is a master, and I love her dearly, and they were juniors. But one thing that Jono and I started doing very early on as we were making the movies, we'd kind of make these reels, these like tone poem reels about, let's say, Gatsby or Australia or Elvis. They were almost like trailers to the movie before they were made, but they were very much music, VO driven to sort of get a feel of what the language of the movie should be. And Jono would make these things. He did one for The Get Down. I'm not kidding you. I went to Netflix when it had like a plastic chair and a whiteboard, and Ted Sarandos was there, and I thought, don't you guys like sell videos? Mm. And so I told them about this project, and I played the reel, and as soon as I saw the reel, I went like, we want that.
Yeah.
You know? Will you definitely be involved? I said, absolutely. And so we've been doing this kind of what I would call cinematic tone poem, and Jono was very strong about Baz. We cannot. We got to do a compendium. We cannot just put this stuff back in the salt mines. It wasn't easy to convince anyone to really put the money up. Good on Sony Vision, Authentic Brands got behind us. They actually own the Elvis IP. And then a lot of the footage was owned by Warners, strangely. They own MGM.
Yeah.
So we had to negotiate. It was so complicated, the rights. There are 75 songs in this movie.
Yeah.
And there are 100, someone reminded me, 125 licenses, because sometimes you have a song where there'll be like two majors on it, but there'll be like some estate where there's a... grandson has got it, and they've got 2 points in it, and you have to sort of like, oh my gosh.
Can I ask you as well, one thing I was really curious about is, this is a great concert film. I'd love to hear about I guess putting the set list together, the order of the songs.
Yes.
Because it feels like it unfolds as a story as well.
Yeah, well, it was that. It was about, like, Jono and I started with kind of themes. If I was telling a story, okay, early life, discovering singing, loss of family, looking for love, what love is to him, how he felt about being in the movies, why he wanted to go back and what he was trying to prove on stage. And we sort of made long plays of this. And then we looked at it, and we just, as we got more and more of his voiceover, we had to find it. I mean, there were gangsters involved, but there was a really lovely, lovely, very private collector who doesn't want his name in it, who actually eventually gave us some really rare stuff. And we would use his voice more and more just to tell the story. And I'll tell you something, I want to be clear about this. I worked with Peter Jackson, his wonderful team, in bringing it back to life, but some snarky kid went, get a life for you people. It's just AI and visual effects. Well, there's not one frame of AI, and there is no visual effect in this film, except I think the visual effect Elvis has on an audience. I mean, we are giving him the world tour he never had.
Well, Baz, before we reach the end, something I really like to do on this show is give recommendations for films I think people that I'm talking to will love.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking hard about what I would give you this. And I came across this film quite recently that I want to recommend you, that I think I wanted to give you something really fun because I think that you have such a fun approach to film. And it's this 1981 film called Fangs from Egypt. Have you heard of this film?
I haven't.
This film...
Love that.
You will really enjoy it, because it begins
just the fact that it's from Egypt, because I recently was ahead of a jury in the Middle East. Oh, my God, there's amazing stuff coming out of there.
And this is an odd one. Like, this is an odd one from 81. It begins as, I guess, a fun riff or perhaps even rip-off of the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Well, I'm very connected to that.
Of course you are. And then it goes further and further to become descending to something crazy. The best I would kind of describe it is it's got this eccentric shape and tone. It's got a lot of humor. But it becomes something more like an unpolished version of the Monkees film Head, where it kind of jumps around a lot.
We played that in our cinema.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I think you'll enjoy this because it's a bit strange, a bit silly. It's like them discovering Dracula instead of Frankenstein.
Right.
And it, to the point where it's even hosted by this older man who just comes in every now and then and just starts
laughing. It's just a jump to the left.
Exactly. And it's
Is it musical?
It's a musical.
Oh,
it's a musical. It's kind of almost feels like in that Bollywood tradition as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm deeply steeped in that too.
So I think you really enjoy this. And lots of, I'd say, fun rip-offs of other popular culture
iconography. Love that. I mean, everything DNAs itself out of something. You don't. No art is created in a vacuum.
Well, I think this is a vacuum you want to get sucked up in. This
I love that, man.
Thanks so much.
I'm going to see Fangs.
I can't wait for you to watch it.
I'm fanging to see Fangs.
Report back to me when you do.
I shall. Guys, make sure I do that. All right.
Thank you very much.
All right, man.
The last video store.
So that was my chat with Baz Luhrmann. Great chat. I was so glad to ask him so much stuff about Elvis and get a bit sticky with the documentary aspect of his new film, Epic Elvis Presley in Concert. You can see it in Australian cinemas from February 19th. Truly, you should go see it in the cinema. Mesmerizing experience, this film.
I plan to. And I also want to hear your Elvis story, please.
Oh, okay. Yes, yes, yes. Well, as you know, lifelong Elvis fan.
Uh-huh.
And when I was a little boy, I reckon I was 6 or 7 years old. Oh, six, maybe 5 or 6.
Yeah.
I loved Elvis so much. And to me, Elvis was synonymous with music and synonymous with singing.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was a little boy, I was like, well, that's how you sing. You sing like Elvis. And I remember when I was like a little boy in kindergarten, we were doing the planning and rehearsals for the kindergarten end of year, you sing a song or whatever, and like maybe it was even the national anthem or something like that, but like in a choir format.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember singing the song. I think it was the national anthem. Like it actually was the national anthem. And so I remember we're in this like little group of all these little kids, and we're singing, and I'm singing the national anthem like Elvis.
Wow.
Yeah, like beneath the radiant Southern Cross. And like that's how I thought you were meant to sing.
Yeah.
And then a teacher comes up to me and just goes, "You're fantastic. You're really great.
Wow.
I'm going to put you in the front so you can sing your little heart out."
That was so cute to hear a five-year-old sing like this, six-year-old.
I know, like doing like Elvis, like vibratos and stuff like that. It's like, come to the front. And I got so embarrassed. Like to go, like to be, to like, you know, someone acknowledging I'm trying to sing like Elvis, 6 years old or whatever. I felt so deeply embarrassed. It was probably the first shame and embarrassment I ever felt.
And you were being encouraged.
I know, but it didn't suit me. There was something about it. I just, I can't do
I'm
it.
I'm a phony.
I don't know what it was. I can't express to you, but it was like this feeling of shame and embarrassment. The first time I ever felt that emotion. And I'm standing at the front of this thing and I just clam up and I just go, can't sing, just can't do it. And this was still during the rehearsals, and I just couldn't do it, couldn't sing anymore. And they were just like, "Oh, okay, we'll just put you in the back."
You got relegated back.
I never sang again. I've never sung publicly.
Wow.
Never.
I'm glad I got to hear a little bit just then.
Even that, I'm like, can you bleep that out?
Absolutely not.
But I'm just like, oh, yeah. Now I'm like, my biggest dream is to learn how to sing like Elvis again. So I regained that.
I wish we knew each other when we were younger, because if you knew me in high school, and I invited you around to my bedroom, you would have seen...
Oh, my God, Em, what are you suggesting here? But you had posters.
You would have seen a poster, a Elvis Presley beanbag.
Wow.
And an Elvis Presley throw on my bed.
Oh, my God. Wow. What was the poster?
I think it was it? I think Jailhouse Rock. You know, classic black and white. He looks so gorgeous.
Let it be known, I just did the Jailhouse Rock.
We heard the click off mic.
We heard the click off mic. We know that I was doing it. Oh yeah, that's so good.
Yeah, it's so dorky.
Oh gosh. Well, you know, in the chat with Baz, I'll just say this. I mention a film, and Baz and I talk a little bit about it. If you have never seen King Creole, it is a masterpiece.
Yeah,
like,
he's a film star. I always forget he's a film star. Like, he made some pretty good films and some pretty bad films.
He's made a lot of bad films, but King Creole is the one that unimpeachably is great. And, you know, Baz and I talked about it. I'm sure it'll come up as a recommendation one day on the show. I've been dying to talk about King Creole to some depth for a while. So go check it out. If you've never seen King Creole and you want to see what Baz and I were talking about, going like, oh, there's one film where Elvis is actually acting in a masterpiece to a substantial level that is not existent in the rest of his films, King Creole is my recommendation for you guys from this episode. So thanks for checking out The Last Video Store. Come see me live when I'm touring my show VHS. If you like hearing me talk about movies, VHS is an even funnier version than we do on this show. Talk about my deep, deep love of movies, in particular genre storytelling. Love you guys. See you at the movies. And thanks for joining us for another year of The Last Video Store. We've got some great episodes coming down the pipeline. There's one that I'm like, I'm meant to be recording in the next 2 days that I can't believe we've got these guests for.
Yep.
And I think if it happens, it'll be the next episode out. So
yes.
Can't believe it. Can't wait. So cross your fingers for me right now, everybody. Cross your fingers. But until then, I'll see you at the movies, baby. This episode of The Last Video Store was brought to you by Tropfest. It's happening on the 22nd of February at Centennial Park. I'll be there. You will too, dude.